think the same thing in regard to the things about us that are publicized that are positive. I think I was talking to you about this, baby. Like, okay, so it's graduation.
Baby is her husband.
Sorry. My Chris. I'm talking about, I know I should have specified with all these men at the table.
Right. We pimping now. Stay thirsty, my friend.
Right. It's graduation season, right? So now this is the time where everybody is talking about the various accolades of different students' accomplishments. And I find that there is an abundance of news surrounding Black student achievement specifically. My thing is, at this point, none of this should be news. It shouldn't even be a rarity that a Black child can graduate. Get accepted to a right. It got into an Ivy League college.
Like the first one in my family, first generation. How right. the hell you still have first generation? You've been here 400 years.
Right. But it ends up being news. It's true. It ends up being news that, you know, oh, this Black student got accepted into four or five Ivy League schools.
There was
schools.
A brother who got accepted to, like, I think all eight Ivy League.
Yeah, and I'm like, this should not be news. This should be something that's just happening because Black people can achieve. Right. But this is stuff, like, it gets posted and everybody's promoting it. Like, oh my God, I'm so proud of him.
He can read.
He's one in a million. He won in a million. You know, and I'm like,
so well.
I'm like, we have to be beyond this.
So when people say things haven't changed, is it things haven't changed or Black people haven't changed?
I mean, if you look at media, it's like we're still making these baby steps. Like the steps are so
media or even our own social media feeds.
Everybody's putting that up there, right?
Look, that
we
that
connecting
that,
it back.
Right. That takes me back to my other topic of thumb activists. You know what I'm saying? We real quick to share.
Johnny
this
graduated
news.
The first grade.
Right. You know, okay, so you have those children that are prodigies and that are 14 graduating from high school and college at the same time. Okay, that's different.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? But I'm not seeing the Asian kid that got into all eight schools. I'm not seeing all the white children, I'm assuming, got into all the
Ivy League. Because then y'all Black people wouldn't be special.
Right. Like, why do we need this?
Do we know? What makes this kid singular? Is it because
he's black
and all of those things happen? I thought it was that, like, this year only one student got into all eight schools and it's this Black guy from New York. And then in the newscast I heard 2 years ago it happened with like an Asian kid in Northern California.
You could be right.
So I just thought he just happened to be like this to get into all the eight Ivy Leagues is a rarity. And this kid is the one, and his parents are like, we're gonna let them know it's a black kid doing it this year.
Right. You could be
we
right.
We all say sweet low, sweet
But I just feel like every year there is some sort of accolade or news given to a Black child that gets into college.
Right.
And I'm just like,
and that's sad.
This should just not be news.
We don't
so are you saying it's like when it's like a Black person got drafted, we should all like, ooh, they drafting Black folks into the NBA.
Right. Like it's a new thing. You know
because
what I mean?
That's because we get all them studies about, you know, all we hear is that half of us don't read. Yeah, half of us don't graduate from high school. So it's like, oh, someone actually is going to an Ivy League. But then as soon as you had that, people were like, oh, affirmative action. He just got in it because he Black.
Does and half of us don't graduate from high school. Nobody ever say whatever the other half did.
No.
But half of us don't graduate from high school. That's not true. Come on.
I don't think that's true.
I don't think that's true.
I'm skeptical of all.
It's sad that we're not even sure.
This is true, Sean. Look, this is true.
Wait.
As we just all got put on Black.
And we Black folks.
I'm skeptical of all statistics that come out regarding Black people anyway.
For the record, I was the first one who questioned when we heard that. He said, that's not true. It might have been a question mark in the end of my head. I might have gone up. That's not true, is it?
Right.
But I did not agree.
Because that's my thing with the Black women in HIV. Whenever I hear those numbers, I'm like, that's not true. That's impossible. You're telling me one in every four Black women is HIV positive. I just absolutely cannot. That means there's a gang of people in my family right now that are HIV positive, and I have absolutely no knowledge of it at all whatsoever.
Or it's one None of every do. Four families is HIV positive. So yours is one of the clean families.
Well, how many black men not working?
Everybody at the table got a job.
All right.
Okay, I think in California, the unemployment, or in L.A., the unemployment is at 10%, and among 100%. Black and Latinos, it's higher. I don't know why we always get lumped together. That's hilarious. But it's higher. It might be like 12% unemployment. But I don't know if that's the men and the women.
But it's funny. Nobody not surprised.
No, we never
I'm
question
not surprised
it.
That it's higher. No, I'm not.
But we don't question
because
it. Because it's like we expect
it. It's higher because there is a tendency. We're used to having a system like institutionalized racism. Like back in the day, like after World War II, you know, we finally got some good manufacturing jobs. But when the guys came back from the war, we lost our jobs. Like back in the day, whenever you had to cut labor, you cut the black labor first. And it was harder for a black man to support his family. But yeah, why that's not true now, I don't know. Why.
Well, black people don't take on the jobs that they used to have to take on post civil rights. I've always found that interesting. So you don't find a whole lot of black people in domestic service anymore. You don't have a whole lot of black housekeepers. You don't have black cooks. Not even in actual restaurants.
Let know? Republicans tell it. We're all welfare kings and queens now.
We just sitting back collecting checks.
I'm just saying, like, that's the big boogeyman, like, them black folks who are, oh, I don't know why I gave him a country voice, but them black.
That was Bubba. That was
them black folks.
Well, being one of the Republicans at the table.
And being, being another Republican at the table.
Miss it.
Like, we got a whole lot of Republicans up in here tonight.
Is it, on a percentage basis, yeah, we're exceeding the average. Yeah, yeah.
Ooh, he can count.
No, there's a number of factors that contribute to black employment. The major part of it is the legacy of instant. What?
What is Tori saying?
Break it down, John. Break it down.
The major part of it is the legacy of institutionalized racism, because obviously that set us so far back behind the eight ball in terms of education, in terms of generationally accumulated wealth, which helps obviously purchase education and the lifestyle atmosphere that allows people the security to go out and get jobs and succeed in the private sector. All of that was denied to us. Now, I am a person who's a bit critical of a lot of our public spending programs. I don't want to get rid of them, but I do think they need to be redesigned to make it more transitional as opposed to, you know, allowing for folks to be dependent. We all know somebody who's happy to just cash a check from the county. I'm sorry. You know, it's not most people who are in that situation. And so some folks overblow it. But that is, Tash, don't tell me that there is nobody that is
honestly,
just a
no, honestly, no. Can I tell you?
This, no, that's absolutely true.
I can't
true.
Think I'm of just, anybody right. off of the top of my head mm-hmm. who just enjoys collecting mm-hmm. a check from the county. However, mm-hmm. if I did, you know what I think about? I'd be like, mm-hmm. yo, compared to you collecting your measly little check from the county or some big agri-pharma company that's being subsidized to not produce something. I mean, out of all the handouts or the jobs program that we're giving to the warmongers and through the Defense Department, who am I going to get? Who am I going to cop an attitude with first?
I'm the wrong Republican to throw that at, because I agree with you on that. That's not something we should be
incentivizing. You go ahead and build the system, you individual, one person, and you just stay lazy. And guess what? You're going to suffer the most, because they're not giving you the type of check that you can really live off of in any type of situation, a welfare situation like that. So you're just going to end up being miserable in your own little world. Right. But I would rather we go after the people who are taking billions of dollars from the government.
Yeah, nobody's saying we shouldn't. We got onto the subject of black unemployment, so that's why.
I just wanted to get angry for no reason.
One thing I want to explore, because I used to go with what the brother was saying, Tash. I used to say this a lot too, and I heard something on the radio a couple of days ago, and somebody made this statement. I had never thought about it in this perspective. I used to say that institutionalized racism, different programs or things were institutionalized, and I heard a brother say, you always hear people talking about something that's institutionalized. Will somebody tell me the name of the institution that's doing it so I can go after them? And I thought about it, I'm like, somebody's practicing institutionalized racism, who is it that's practicing it, and how do I find them?
The California prison lobby. In Arizona, the prison lobby.
Now I agree with that. Now here's my thing. If I went after them, what am I going to legally get them on?
That's the thing. You have to fight them with dollars, and you have to give your congressman an incentive to not accept their money or people to believe that their lives will be better off if they build a prison in your neighborhood. So it really, like, you can't – the thing is they are working within the system because they are lobbying, and we're allowed to lobby. But, you know, they wrote the Arizona law that gets the – you can pull over any unwarranted, suspicious-looking, illegal immigrant. Basically, where in Arizona they can pull over any Latino. And they wrote it because they saw a dwindling – prison population. So they suggested to the state legislature, hey, you know what? We want to get hard on immigration. And they saw it as an opportunity to have the prisons full.
Are those people being in prison? I thought they were being deported.
No, they're being held for a majority of the time. It actually is costing Arizona more when they hold them.
I didn't realize.
And so people don't understand. They can't draw the connection.
Well, I think what I was getting to is, if we say that there's institutionalized racism in prisons. Like, let's use California, for example, where we live. If we say that blacks are disproportionately being locked up in California prisons because of the laws, you're saying if it takes a law to implement a system of racism, then it takes another law to undo it. So if the large proportion of blacks are being institutionalized in California, why are blacks not out fighting to turn that law around? Because there's enough of us in California that if we signed a petition as black people, we got out and we said, okay, we do not like the prison system the way it's structured in California because it indirectly affects us as black people. I look around and I say, okay, I hear us complaining, but I don't see any action behind the complaint.
Because it's the generation of thumb activism.
Which then says,
if you create a meme talking about this with a hashtag, guarantee you it'll go viral.
Motion, that might be the route to go. Because a meme would carry a lot of weight. And I would say that, you know, a lot of us don't do it because we feel helpless and we don't believe in the system. Same ignorant folks would be like, I'm not going to vote. It's not going to change anything anyhow. And it's like, oh, my God, we got to go through this.
So then the question is it's not anybody doing anything to you. It's what you are allowing.
Oh, of course. Yeah. Institutionalized racism doesn't happen without the person who's the victim being complicit in it.
I think this is why the people who won't accept it, because they're saying, okay, the rules are the same for all of us. If I got a group of people together, let's say, for example, I got a group of Caucasians and conservatives together.
Are you conservative?
Yes.
I always
tell people, let me explain. Conservative, my definition of conservative is conserving those things in the black community that made us healthy and strong. That's what my conservative is.
So you wouldn't send your kid to an integrated school. You would send them to a really great black school.
I plead the fifth.
Okay.
But I think you get the picture of what it means to, you know. So anyway, but my point is that if when we're working within a system of laws, we have to make the law work for us like everybody else does. If I hear a black saying, well, there's a disproportionate number of blacks in L.A. County unemployed, I'm like, okay, well, why are you taking that? There are jobs being produced every day in L.A. County. Why are you sitting there saying black people not being employed and you're allowing it? You have enough voting rights. You have enough voting power to influence systems and policy as like anybody else. But if you don't exercise that, that is now your responsibility.
As a kid, I would say I was often like jealous that we didn't have like Hebrew schools, that we didn't have like or Greek schools. I would just be like, I would tell my mom and dad, like, I really feel as if as a community, we don't have any ceremony or any tradition to like really galvanize us as a people. Like, I want all the Jewish holidays, you know, and we celebrated Kwanzaa as a kid as a way of just, well, maybe we'll find something. Yes, there's a bit of Kwanzaa that is not contrived, but it was created uniquely for that.
To fill that space.
Yeah, to fill that space. But there really is a community gap within the Black community, even though we have a community and we're the church. Served as the epicenter of that, especially during the civil rights era. You're right. We bear a lot of responsibility in this matter. I think where I get really, self-righteous. Yeah, where I get really like self-righteous is when people who consider themselves fighters for justice. Period. Turn a blind eye to injustice for someone else because it doesn't affect them. Whether it be a privileged Latino or a white family against injustice for Black or Asians, or whether it be Black folks who are turning a blind eye against injustice about gays, or whether I get really bothered by that. And I think that people who believe in justice should fight for it, even if they don't like the people
or the cause doesn't affect them.
Yeah, or the people who it would benefit.
Right. That is human nature, though, of course. I mean, people just have a tendency not to be concerned about the things that don't concern them directly. But the issue in the Black community, in part, is the fact that even within the Black community, you've got portions of the community that turn inward, I think, and tend not to be as engaged with the plight of the broader Black struggle, apart from the sort of, you know, thumb activism that we alluded to a little earlier. And unfortunately, the church, which, as Tash pointed out, was the backbone of social and the engine of social progress and political activism in the Black community, has now largely, I think, become sort of an insular and a divided sort of institution where, rather than coalescing around a broader agenda for the progress of the Black community, for the most part, we're just competing. Churches are competing for membership, competing for tithing dollars, and maybe we'll all get up in arms about, you know, Zimmerman, Trayvon Martin thing. We'll all get mad about Donald Sterling, but there's no positive, holistic agenda.
And no united
education reform.
For education reform, for economic empowerment, for the maintenance, obviously, of our voting access and so forth. And, you know, part of the answer to that, as you guys mentioned, is, you know, being politically engaged and not being so cynical about the political system that you don't understand the fact that that's still your primary vehicle for instituting the sort of changes that you want to see. And so as a person who's, you know, running for office myself, I get that all the time. You know, what does it matter whether I vote or not? You know, the system is rigged, yada, yada, yada. But, you know, how spoiled are we acting that we expect that the system needs to be perfect before we are willing to condescend to participate
and get involved?
You know, when the system was a hell of a lot worse than it was before, Black people were much bolder and much braver in challenging and in using the system to fix the system, in fact.
Right.
You know? And so, you know, we've lost a lot of that. So when Sean talks about, defines his conservatism in that way, I mean, I identify that because there is a Black tradition in America that has been lost in many respects and trivialized, right?
Yeah, but that goes back too to people also not being.
There's no value placed on it no more. That other people's like, they could just say and do whatever they want to us because they're like,
well, right,
now your trash in South Central Los Angeles, and people say, why you put that there?
Right.
Go jump that same trash in Beverly Hills and see if you get that same response.
Right. Right. Now people are going crazy, but it's also people
being disrespected.
But and people also are missing the actual history lessons. So all that we're talking about in regard to how Black people utilize the political the structure of politics to gain certain freedoms and to change the system. Nobody's reminding folks this is what we had to do to make these changes now. So if you're there's nobody. We're almost in this holding position waiting for somebody to emerge as this leader or these leaders to show us the way, and nobody's coming.
But also, I think it's because, and I shouldn't be, I'm not trying to be patronizing, so if this comes across this way, you know, yeah, exactly, thank you. I think that some people just don't take ownership of their city, their country, their neighborhood, and they don't they honestly don't feel as if they're a part of, even with a Black guy as president. On the radio today, I heard someone describe themselves as they're like, yo, whenever I moved to France, and whenever people called me American, I would look at them and be like, I'm not American, I'm Black. Like, because their concept of American was, you know, a white family that had the flag on their front lawn, and they didn't feel as if they ever in this country that they had that ownership, that they could say that with pride. And that's not an excuse, but it's more or less to help understand why someone would throw a piece of trash cavalierly out of the window.
You're saying this is what the Black guy was saying about himself, or what people in France were saying about him?
Oh, I did. My bad. I was trying to say that the Black guy, people in France were calling him American, and they're like, but you're so American. And he would say, I'm not American, I'm Black. And,
no, that's consistent with what you're saying.
Yeah, and she came to realize that she is American, mm-hmm. Especially in the face of people in France. I mean,
I had that same moment traveling abroad. It hit me, and mind you, it was years ago now, but it hit me while I was abroad how very American I was, because here, not that I would have called myself somebody who was anti-American, but I didn't necessarily think of myself as being patriotic either. But then it was more of a cultural situation than anything. And when you're in another country, I think that's when it kind of smacks you on the face. Like, yeah, you actually are. No matter how much you would like to deny it or think that it doesn't affect you or impact you, it does. Mm-hmm. You know, it's your foundation.
This is Sean again. I just want to add that I was telling John earlier, there's going to be a huge wake-up call in the Black community across this country after Barack's term is up. Mm-hmm. Because a lot of the stuff that we've seen that Black leadership was calling for prior to this Black president, it has all been on hold. And we probably won't have another Black president after Barack Obama. And I think all those activists and all those groups who've been quiet for the last 6 years, going into 8 years, they're going to come out the woodwork. And my question
is, activists?
In the Black community.
Okay.
Who were saying all of the flaws and all the things that were problems in the Black community that you've not heard for the last 6 years, mm-hmm. as if these problems don't still exist. Mm-hmm. And I understand why we've been quiet, because we want to. I'm talking about on massive scales where it's on the evening news. Like, you would see people out protesting, like the unemployment rate right now. If it was this high when a white person was in office, you would hear a lot of Black leadership saying this is unacceptable.
But they don't want to criticize
Obama. Because it's directly will be related to him. And mm-hmm. I understand that. I can appreciate that. Mm-hmm. But what I'm saying is, after that term is over, it's business as usual. We're back to the thing. And what I'm asking Black people to consider is, don't go for a party. Look for somebody who's representing your interests. And I'm talking about seriously representing your interests and not giving you window dressing.
That's true. We tend to vote. I think political alliances for a lot of Black folks is almost like religion. So if it's what grandma did,
my
mama then
went to church, so I'm on my way to church.
Exactly. Exactly.
It amazes me how many Black people aren't in favor of socialism, just because it's like a general rhetoric of anti-socialism in American capitalism, but they don't understand the value that socialism plays, mm-hmm. and how we practice socialism when in the face of ardent racism and Jim Crow and, you know, post-slavery. And I mean, listen, the miseducation of Black folks and what we need to know is many people have talked about it. I just think that Everything I say is right.
That might well, be what I we mean, need to I mean, wrap it.
And only other thing I would add is I'm always stressing to black people, African American, whatever title you want to use to call yourself. Whatever standards you're holding black people to, hold everybody else to those standards. Don't have a double standard that we say, okay, black people, you can do this, and then other people can't. If
Like the N-word?
Say, for example, the Trayvon Martin case or the Donald Sterling case. If what Donald Sterling did was so disrespectful towards us as a black people, when you see other black people doing that, you call them out too. Because if one person, if to me, disrespect doesn't have a face on it. If you have a set of standards for you and your community, you make everybody else accountable to those standards. Even the drug dealer down the street from where you live.
Yeah. In principle, exactly what you're saying. I don't agree, but there's layers to that, as with everything. And what one person in your family says can be considered not disrespectful, but someone out of your family saying it, it is disrespectful. And so we do have to understand that, you know, not all people are family and not everyone gets the right to say something about you or your family member that, that, you know, that family can say.
Well, I guess the parallel to that, I think, in the way Sean is describing it would be if, I mean, just a gross hypothetical, but just invert the colors and say Donald Sterling happened to be a black owner of a cricket team or something and started talking about how he didn't want white people at his game. So is that kind of how you...
Well, I'm looking at things that mm-hmm. there are so many things that I see parallel to what Donald Sterling said and did and how he treated and just the way he looks at black people. I see so many middle class and upper class blacks doing the same thing. And we see them and we know who they are.
To lower class.
We talk about the whole slumlord thing. We know so many black slumlords in South Central Los Angeles who are exploiting blacks on Section 8.
Yeah.
And nobody's saying anything, and they're using this excuse, he's getting paid.
And because they do good things in the community otherwise.
Well, Donald Sterling was actually getting rid of black and Latino people in his buildings because he felt they were lowering the property value. And his wife apparently posed as a government official doing a survey in the units of their building. And really what she was doing was writing down the ethnicity of these people to make a list of who they wanted to evict. So it's not just him being a slumlord. It's about Bomani Jones really laid this out. It was about what he was doing was redlining black people out of certain neighborhoods. Even if it was a good neighborhood with a good school where a black family wanted or a Latino family wanted to be there for the embedderment of their children, he was trying to get rid of them. And you're right. Everyone is discriminating about the type of tenant they have. But I don't think that if your tenant is paying rent and on time and they're keeping your property in good condition, then you don't have, I mean, courts have just said that you don't have any standing for evicting them. And even if they're keeping your property in mediocre condition, you don't have a leg to stand on, you know, like.
Well, I'm not discrediting what you're saying. What I'm saying around the standards is this. When you have a set of standards amongst yourselves and your people, which is what we used to practice in the black community.
An example? Like what standard? Well, give me an example of something concrete.
Like say, for example, if we say, okay, in South Central Los Angeles, we're going to have a set of standards that we live by that everybody's going to respect. Say, for example, if you're living and renting somebody's apartment, it's going to be hell. You're going to protect that person's property because that's your home. And if that landlord has a relationship with the tenants that's respectable and the tenants have a relationship with the landlord that's respectful, when outsiders come into the black community, they must also abide by those standards. One of the reasons Donald Sterling got away with a lot of what he was able to get away with is because black people had normalized being disrespected. And what I'm saying is we have to stop normalizing things that are not healthy for us as a people, not as individuals. We have to have a standard amongst ourselves that say this is how we operate. This is what we do.
I agree with you.
And I think what happens is when people see that there's no disrespect, it's easy to come in and exploit people.
Yeah, I agree with you in the sense that there are certain things that we seem to turn a blind eye to. And I had this conversation with my mom because she stays on the phone with our local council. There's Albert Lord. But what's the name of the man who's over the district? I can't. I forget his name. Thomas. No, not Mark Ridley Thomas. Herb Wesson. And Albert Lord is like his second in command. He's the one that actually comes out and talks to the people. My mama got him on speed dial. She utilizes that 311 number, which I'm telling everybody in LA, start using it. Because the other day, I went over to Crenshaw Fish on Jefferson and Crenshaw. I was appalled at the amount of trash on that corner. It kind of blew my mind. It was as if somebody had a big dumpster, one of those big dumpsters, and just dumped it right there on that corner. It's bad enough the fish market is going to smell like it smells. But that entire corner was just disgusting. And, you know, we're right there across the street from West Angeles and that huge edifice that they've created. And I'm like, why is it okay for all this trash to be here in my neighborhood? I know if it was on my corner, I would be having a hissy fit. But it's not okay for it to even be down the street from me like this. So I called my mom. I'm like, hey, so what do I do? And she's like, call 311. Tell them what's happening down there. She was like, if you see that trash there in a couple of days, you call them back. I'll call Mr. Lord and somebody will get over there and clean it up.
And see, I would have gone into Crenshaw Fish and been like, hey, I know you don't own the sidewalk, but this is the last time I'm coming in here because the area right in front of you isn't clean. And it's in your interest as the owner and the Metro PCS that's next door, it's in your interest to make sure it's in a bin. I mean, and even like when your parking lot has stuff over there, like you need to ask somebody to pick it up in your parking lot and keep it clean, because people tend to keep stuff clean when they see it's clean and orderly. Right. It's like you don't want to, but when it's dirty, it's like it's trashy anyhow. Let me just throw it out.
Yeah. And I'm like, why is this okay?
When you see kids on the block going to school, going to college, whatever. The area that we're in right now, the Baldwin Crenshaw area, is what we around America, around the country, consider to be an upper middle class black community. And a lot of people from other states and whatever, and they hear about it, they're like, you know, the blacks there are doing well and they're living well. And I'm like, what you just described. Go look at some of the things that they're tolerating in that middle class black community, though. That's a disgrace. It's shameful. And what I'm saying is, if the blacks who have the wherewithal to set a standard is not setting one, how are we asking the other ones to lift themselves up without an example?
True.
True. Right, because sometimes we have this mentality that says that, well, we're doing a little bit better than the folks who are still living where we came from. And so we can, so long as our standard is a little bit above theirs, we can still afford to be, I think, a little lackadaisical in the way we treat our property and our community and so forth.
And
speaking,
I think
from
some,
a middle class,
I'm sorry, John, I just want to say real quick, I also think sometimes it's not even that deep. I think sometimes people are just complete, like you almost have blinders on because you're so accustomed to it that you don't even see it.
It's a subconscious thing.
How many people pass Jefferson and Crenshaw every day and that trash has been there and don't even give it a second thought? It just is what it is.
Right. Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
Well, at least go in there to make sure that one of the owners or the manager of that Metro PCS called 311 and was like, yo, someone tipped over the trash bin. Y'all need to have someone come. I just, for me, it's incumbent upon the storekeeper who's right in front of it to at least make sure it's in a bin, you know, like get a public trash can right there. Yeah, exactly.
You know, I mean, really, it goes all the way back to the sentiment that Tash, I think, illustrated before. Our sense or lack of a sense, I think, of ownership, I think, of our community and even of our country, really. And, you know, because we've been so sort of psychologically displaced from feeling as if we ought to feel that way because of the circumstances by which we've,
like, second class citizens.
Right, exactly. Because of the circumstances by which we've come here. And yet, for the health of ourselves, we need to adopt, I think, an ownership mentality. I don't just simply mean that in the property sense, but just in the sense of saying that, you know, regardless of how it is we've come to our particular point here, we are here. This is our home. This is our country, because we're not getting another one, you know. You can't just...
Yeah, I ain't trying to leave.
Well, right. Exactly. Exactly.
thoughts on the subject. Hit us up. Let us know what you're thinking. On Twitter, at Black Is Online. On Facebook, at Black Is Magazine. Email us at kc@blackisonline.com. Hit us up on the hotline at 323-455-4219. And check us out at www.blackisonline.com. Thanks for listening.